Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today for OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales. I'm Kelly Bloomer.
And I'm Tom Bloomer.
OK, Tom, you're our sales pro. In 30 words or less, can you tell us about this podcast?
I'm going to try. You know, us salespeople like to talk, Kelly.
You sure do.
All right, 30 words or less?
Can you do it?
Well, if you're a sales pro and you're looking to grow in your sales career, if you like good, lively sales discussion, I think this is going to be a show for you. I've walked your walk for over 30 years in sales. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles I think you may be facing as a seller, a sales manager, and as a VP of sales. I currently help assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Well, Kel?
Yeah, you really went over 30 words.
But I think it was good.
I do too.
Okay, so I hope our listeners will be all set. And hey, let's roll up our shirt sleeves and let's get at it.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. Okay, Tom, you said there was something special you wanted to talk about today.
I really did. You know, they say opposites attract.
True.
And there are certain things you and I are a little bit opposite on, right?
There are a few, yes.
You like people.
I do.
I don't necessarily like people as much.
No, you could be a hermit.
Yeah. I kind of hide that, I think, pretty well. You have to in sales.
But yeah?
Yeah, if you give me a good book and the mountains, and I'm fine if there's not much else in my community.
That's true. You could sit out on that porch all day long.
But different people, a lot of people, they really need a sense of community, a sense of belonging, people to talk to. And I've always looked at you that way.
Okay. I do like to be around people. I do like to talk.
Give me an idea. What does that mean to you? What's important about a community for you?
Well, it's nice to have people around to talk about different things, whether it's a problem or something that's making you happy, to hear other people's points of view, to maybe get something that they said that they really enjoy. You'd be like, maybe I'd like that too. It's just so much with being together and talking with people and being around people, you get other points of view. You get so much more. If you're having a bad day and they're having a good day, you can feed off of that. So much things like that just means so much.
And that's important.
It is.
And when there's issues going on, when I have a bad day,
right,
I don't want to talk to anybody about it.
And you don't talk about what's going on either.
When you're having a bad day, you'd like to talk it out. That helps you, right?
It does. And drives you crazy sometimes.
Well, I'm getting better at that. I'm definitely trying to get better at that. But, you know, today's guest, Scott Leese, I discovered this group, I don't know, about May or June of last year when the pandemic was first getting started. And as you and I have talked, I was kind of born for the pandemic. You know, I didn't mind being stuck at home all day, but most people are not like that. I think a lot of people are closer to you. They want to have those people to interact with. And right in the beginning of this, Scott and his partner, Amy Vola, is in this group. It's called Thursday Night Sales. And they saw a need for all these people now working from home, especially in sales, which can be such a lonely job.
Right.
Right. Probably why I liked it, because I didn't mind being in the car all day by myself. But so many people, it gets kind of lonely.
Right.
You know, and you want to talk to people that you can trust. And they started a sales community on Thursday nights that is just amazing. And, you know, I've had an opportunity to listen in on a lot of their episodes when they get together. Mm-hmm. And boy, people, they look forward to that. That's like the highlight of their week. They get to share. They get to talk sales. They get to learn. And, you know, the hundreds of people that Scott's worked with over the past year, I think they're pretty happy that they had an opportunity to share in a community like that.
I'm sure, because they're missing being out there talking with everybody, even if it's just talking about what type of sales they do and going into businesses and things like that. It's still out there talking to people about different things.
Yeah. And it's so important. And I joke around saying I don't like people. Obviously I do to a certain extent.
So true.
Although I think we like our dogs most of all, but that's a story for another day.
That's an occasional liking of both of them sometimes and not both of them.
Exactly. But I wanted to spend a minute as we kick off this episode because Scott wrote a book that I loved on Addicted to the Process. He talks sales. So our episode today, we get into a lot of sales. We get into a lot of leadership conversation. We don't really touch as much on the sales community. So I wanted to kind of bring that up because hopefully our listeners, if they're not already joining in on Thursday night sales. They'll learn about a little bit today and they'll listen in. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a good episode on sales. And hopefully for people out there, it gives them an opportunity to feel like they belong to something.
Okay, well, let's listen.
Let's go.
My name is Alex from Chicago. Okay, Boomer, teach me something about sales.
All right, everyone. We are here today with Scott Lease. Scott is CEO and founder of some amazing things. I'm going to let Scott, I'm going to let you describe them in a few minutes, but you've got your own consulting gig. You're co-founder of one of my favorite sales communities, the Thursday Night Sales. You've got something called Surf and Sales, which I don't completely understand. That's probably the boomer in me because I grew up inland. So I know I'm missing out on something I want to learn. You're doing a bonfire goal setting thing. So I'm interested in that. But what we really want to do, we're going to jump in quick, Scott. I want you to tell everybody about yourself. And then I just recently finished one of your books. And I want to take you back. A lot of our listeners are young in sales, right? They've just recently gotten started. So I want to kind of go back to when you started. And you talk about in the book how you were thrown to the wolves. So I'm going to throw you to the wolves today with a lot of rapid fire sales discussion and see if we can help some of our listeners today. But let's kind of get started. Tell us about yourself and give us something you're really excited to share.
I love the forewarning about all the rapid fire questions coming. That's great.
You didn't read that in the email? You should have read the email. I tried to tell everybody up front.
Listen, I love coming to these things with no preparation whatsoever. I want to make sure that I'm candid, off the cuff, don't sound rehearsed. So I have no idea. I literally have no idea what you're going to ask me, and I'm all completely good with that. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, I built and scaled a half dozen SaaS companies over the last 16 years. So I've been a senior vice president of sales six times. Five of those times I took companies from literally zero to somewhere between 20 and 25 million ARR. So that really became my niche. Started doing some consulting on the side. In 2017, I wrote a best-selling book called Addicted to the Process about kind of how I got into sales and the mindset required in my own sales philosophy, which I call the addiction model of selling. Started my own consulting company, went full-time, cut the W-2 cord, went full-time with my own business in October of 2019, so 15 months or so ago now. Started a company a few years ago called Surf and Sales. It's a micro sales conference is what it is. So it's the opposite of, like a Dreamforce where there's 100,000 people running around and vendors everywhere. I take 15 people a couple times a year, along with my partner, Richard Harris, and our friend, Jeff Coleman, who helps run all the back end stuff. And we talk sales, we talk leadership, we talk business. It's a much more experiential type of sales conference. And rather than going to, the Hilton in Austin or in Raleigh or someplace, boring that we've all been a million times, we go to Costa Rica, we go to Nicaragua, we go to Mexico, and we combine surfing. So we combine a vacation with a sales conference. That spawned out the Surf and Sales podcast. We cranked out 200 episodes of the Surf and Sales podcast in 2020. We're pacing to do about 250,000 downloads in 2021 right now. I know it's early, but we're off to a really strong start this year. When the pandemic hit, I started Thursday Night Sales. It's the longest running and largest virtual sales happy hour in the world. Over 10,000 people came to our happy hours in 2020. What the heck else do I do? I just released another book called From Rep to Manager, kind of a guide for people who are trying to make the leap from individual contributor to sales leadership. I run my own Patreon group, and I have another book coming out in April about the life and times of a VP of sales called More Than a Number. So I got my hands in a lot of different cookie jars, Tom. That's as fast as a recap as I can give you there.
No, that's perfect. And that's going to give our listeners an idea as we start talking sales. You've done it. You've been out there on the street. You've worked with a lot of startups. So you kind of know your thing, which I'm really excited about. But when we're done and we're done recording, you got to tell me more about this sales conference, because that's not a boomer conference. That's not my grandfather's sales conference. So
it's not. I
definitely want to learn a little bit more about that as we go through. So the book I read was You're Addicted to the Process. And to me, anyone that's in sales, they've been in sales, whether it's for 2 minutes, 2 years, anyone who just kind of needs to reinvent themselves, boy, there's so many good nuggets in that book. And it's a nice, easy to read book. I wanted to kind of dive into that if we could. We'll start there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You talk about building the mindset, and I think that's critical for people in sales. Give me an idea. Why is that so important? And what is, you know, one of the tips that you can share about building the right mindset?
Well, you know, before we started recording, we were briefly talking about sports, right? And if you, my sons play baseball, they play basketball. I played tennis and soccer in college for 4 years. So, you know, I have a athletic kind of mind. And you think about a baseball player, for example. If you bat 300 long enough, you're a Hall of Famer. That's going 3 out of 10. That's failing 7 out of 10 times. As a salesperson, all of us would absolutely kill to have that type of success rate. When you're just getting started in sales, when I was coming up at least, people were like, you just need 1 out of 100. 1 out of 100. So now imagine, you know, the best baseball hitter of all time, whoever you think that is, Ted Williams, Tony Gwynn, Barry Bonds, whatever. Imagine these guys failing 99 times in a row before they finally got a hit. And when they got a hit, everybody going nuts thinking that they were, you know, the best player of all time. So the amount of failure that we have to deal with in our profession is second to none. I don't know a single other profession that even gets close to it. So we have to develop resiliency that never, ever stops. We have to understand how to ride the high and low. You know, don't get too excited, don't get too down. We have to know how to properly deal with people who are rude to us, right? Or talk down to us or belittle us.
That happens in sales?
Yes, every now and then. Not only that, we're a disrespected profession. Let's be honest, we don't even have a fucking degree in university for what we do, right? That doesn't happen that often that I could think of.
No.
You got founders and companies that, you know, they went to fancy schools, they went to Duke or, you know, Stanford or someplace like that. And, you know, they got an MBA, right? Or they're in finance. I don't have that. I don't have any of that stuff. I couldn't get into those schools, right? Mm-hmm. If they could, they'd probably automate our profession and have a self-serve model, because we're an expense that they don't really, you know, love. We're also very emotional, right? We get fired up, we get frustrated. So we're a pain in the neck to deal with sometimes. So all of this is sort of the backdrop in the landscape that we go to work in every single day. And in order to get really good at this and have a long career, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years of a career in this industry, you have got to be extremely mentally tough. And, you know, I wrote Addicted to the Process specifically for people who are just considering getting into sales or just in it, you know, for the first time, and maybe as a little refresher for folks who've been in it a while. And I really wanted to hammer that point home.
Yeah. And like you said, a lot of people don't know if they have that, right? A lot of you don't wake up and you don't go to college for 4 years learning to be that resilient and able to overcome those things. So your book talks about confidence, work ethic, courage, several different things that kind of make up the characteristics of a mindset. I've often debated with people of which one comes first. So I'm new to sales. I'm just getting started. I get thrown to the wolves, right? They give me a one-day program and say, go sell. And I get a lot of rejection, which is normal. What's that first thing that has to happen for them to start to build that mindset?
No, Tom, I honestly think that it's self-confidence. You know, I think it begins and ends with how you feel about yourself and how you develop confidence as a salesperson. I think it starts with understanding your market, right? Understanding your buyer, what their pains are. I think it starts with understanding your product and what you sell. It's a lot easier to be confident and resilient if I'm like, oh, I know how to talk about this industry. I know how to talk about real estate. I know everything there is to know about my title insurance software product. Go ahead, ask me anything. I'm not scared, right? It's a lot scarier if I step into, you know, your job right now and you tell me to go sell whatever it is you're selling and I'm like, oh shit, right? So it starts there, I think, with knowledge about the industry and who you're selling to and your product. And that self-confidence, that belief in yourself allows you to push through when things don't go your way. Yeah, people are much more apt to give up or get discouraged when it's something that they don't feel supremely confident in, that some in activity that they're engaged in. That's where it starts for me.
I could not agree more. I absolutely. When I went through your characteristics and whenever I've debated with people in the past, to me, it starts with confidence. Because if you have that confidence, the other things will come. And to me, even work ethic. I've worked with a lot of sellers that would be stagnant because they weren't confident or they didn't know their product well enough. They almost didn't want to engage with a customer because they were afraid of a question, you know, that they may get hit with. So I agree. It definitely starts with that confidence. Let's talk about, you mentioned knowing your stuff, you know, knowing your product. One of the key things in sales, and you really touch on it in your book, is, you know, you've got to know your product inside and out, but you have to know how much to share and how to get that across. You can't just sit there and spend 25 minutes telling them all kinds of features and benefits, right? You're going to bore the heck out of somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. This is 10 years ago, maybe. I was car shopping and you know, everybody at least has a stereotypical idea of what car shopping.
I love car shopping.
It's like it. Yeah.
But my wife hates it. She absolutely despises it, but go ahead.
Well, I'm in your wife's camp. I absolutely despise it. Okay. But I'm quite good at it. And the reason I'm good at it is I know exactly what I want. I know exactly what I'm going to pay. And if somebody doesn't want to give me what I want, I just say adios and I kind of move on. Now, the backdrop is I'm not a car person, okay, at all. I just want to know, you know, what color is it? What's the gas mileage? And like, will it remotely keep me safe? That's it. Then I'm out the door, right? So I show up on the lot. I know exactly what car I want. And I start getting, you know, details, I don't know, engine size, braking speed, whatever, like all the bells and whistles. And I literally tell the guy, like, listen, dude, I don't care about all that shit. I just don't. Like, you're talking my ear off. Like, let me just take this thing for a test drive. Okay. And if you shut the hell up for like 20 minutes, you'll probably get a deal. You'll probably sell a car today. And he couldn't.
Even when you warned him, right?
He couldn't. And so, you know, I said, yeah, you know, thanks for your time. I'm not gonna buy it. This is right before Thanksgiving. So I'm at home now, like the day before Thanksgiving, and the guy's boss, you know, calls me. I must have given him my information at some point. I don't remember. The guy calls me up and he's like, hey, you were in, you know, looking at this car the other day. And I'm like, yeah, I was gonna buy it. Here's the price that I wanna pay. I just didn't want to have this long conversation about things I don't care about. He wasn't paying attention to me and what I want to know in order to make a purchase. So long story short, that manager like met my price. I ended up buying the car. The point is, we fall in love with our product way too much. And we think a prospect or a buyer wants to or needs to know everything there is about that product. That's not true. It's not true. The thing that matters most to you might be completely irrelevant to me. So you don't lead with everything your product can do because you're going to overwhelm somebody and you're going to turn them off and you're going to elongate the sales cycle. So instead, ask questions ahead of time, find out what matters to this particular prospect, focus on those things. If they need to know more, guess what they'll do? They'll ask you. And so every time they ask, you're just like, boom, got the answer to that one. Boom, got the answer to that one, right? And you look like a genius. Mm-hmm. That's what I was getting at in the book. And that's kind of, you know, part of the teaching that I have when I talk to salespeople and sales leaders. And that's been my philosophy for a long time.
Very good. I've got bad news and bad news. So the first thing is, and you're in better physical shape than I think I ever was at any point in my life. But when you get to be my age, when I car shop now, the only thing I want them to tell me is how's my back going to feel if I'm driving for 3 hours, right? Because we live in Carolina. I want to go to this beach. I want to go to the mountains. You got to help me with my back. So that's all I want to know, you know, as we go through. But the other thing is, I really think I understand why so many salespeople do what you just said, that the trap they fall into. It's because that's what they're taught, right? Yeah, and you have a book now on leadership, and I'm sure you're addressing it with a lot of the companies you work with. But if you bring a new seller in and the only thing you teach them are features and benefits, guess what? That's, you're telling them, hey, this is what everybody cares about.
Yeah. And, you know, you just hit the nail on the head. Like, that's what's wrong with a lot of salespeople and a lot of sales organizations, you know? And one of the reasons I wrote the book that I just released a couple weeks ago is because there's not a lot of literature or teachings or trainings on sales leadership. There is a million and one books on how to sell. There's a million and one sales trainers out there. Off the top of your head, tell me somebody who's a sales leadership trainer. I can't think of one.
Well, Bloomer Associates does a pretty darn good job at it. But after that, no, then I'm stuck.
Plug right there. It's you. And that's it. And there's not that many books on sales leadership. So I just saw this void in the market. And I'm like, well, I should, you know, throw something together and give people some information. That's the same thing I'm doing. And I'm almost done with the vice president level. Nobody teaches you how to be a VP of sales. Nobody. There's no coaching. There's no training program. And so you end up with, you know, not great sales leadership, which produces not great salespeople, which produces not great sales organizations, right?
Yep. And you know, every step of the way, sometimes we get further and further away from our passion. So I won't bore the listeners, but we'll have it. If you ever want to talk to somebody about being a VP of sales, I can tell you how I went from one to the next, became a VP of sales, and at a certain point just absolutely hated waking up on Monday morning because what I was passionate about, I'm no longer doing. So you take that square peg and you try to put it in a round hole, and a lot of times it does not work well.
Well, there's a really interesting trend going on in the last 5 years or so, maybe longer, and I just haven't been aware, but at least for me in the last 5 years, where people like myself and like you, Tom, who've been in sales leadership a long time and have done it more than once and more than once successfully, we sort of look around and we're like, why do I want to deal with this? Why do I want to deal with, you know, having my head in a guillotine with my average tenure across the whole industry being like 15 to 18 months right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do I want to, you know, whip the racehorse, so to speak, and hit these huge numbers only to be told, oh, good job, Scott. Next month you have to do 6 times that number, right? And all this kind of stuff. Why do I want to be told how to sell and how to run a sales org from some 23-year-old kid who just came out of Duke who raised $2.5 million? Come on, man. So once you've done it a few times, it's like, look, I can make a bigger impact helping multiple organizations out or helping individuals who are at an earlier stage and getting help that I never got. And everybody that I know is like, once you've done it a few times, and especially if you've got, you know, you've been fortunate enough to grow large lucrative companies and you've got a good chunk of equity, it's like, I don't need to do that anymore. I got this big liquidity event coming and I'm out. So it's not surprising to me. And it's going to be interesting to see, because I think there's going to be a void of like really strong, experienced sales leaders coming soon. And so the people who are coming up, they're going to need a lot of help, or there's a world of pain coming.
Now, and I love what you said a minute ago, and I hope our listeners didn't miss it, because to me, it's a critical step in sales as well. So what you're talking about with what you're doing, you saw a gap, right? You saw a gap of what's needed. And you didn't see it out in the marketplace. And then you filled it with the book you're working on. You're saying, hey, there's not enough good leaders out there, so I should write a book on this and help leaders. Sellers, to me, a lot, it's the same thing. When you're sitting down with your prospects, what is the gap? What are they missing? What do they need? And then let me creatively fill that gap for them. You're still a salesperson, Scott, right? With what you're doing, you're still selling every day, and that's where our listeners need to hone in on.
Yeah, I'm more of an individual contributor now than I have been in 20 years, basically. You know, you're completely right. And I can't remember where I heard this phrase, but it's like, see a need, fill a need. That's where it comes from. You see something missing, boom, you go there. You see a gap over here, boom, fill that. And whether you're doing that to try to rise up the ranks, or you're doing that to try to, you know, put your flag in the sand and say, hey, this is my thing over here. There's worse strategies than that as far as trying to become successful.
Yeah, and I think it ties into one of the things you wrote about the emergency room, you know, concept. Go in there, diagnose, figure. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit what that is?
Well, it's a little bit has to do with the sense of urgency. And one of the things that we all lack or struggle to bring forth in our sales process is urgency. I don't care if you're selling, you know, beer or you're selling software or whatever, like, especially in some old antiquated industries that have been doing things a particular way for a long time, you're struggling against inertia more than anything else. The whole, well, this is the way we've always done things. So, you know, the analogy that I made in the book was, we've got to make sure people understand this is not like a paper cut, all right? This is like a severed limb that demands a quick trip to the emergency room. And that's what we have to get them to understand and believe. Now, I can't just preach that to you. That's not good enough, right? I have to help you kind of tell the story yourself, right? In terms of the impact it's having on your organization, the financial drain, and what you're losing potentially by not doing anything, what the competition might be doing, right? And getting people to move, and move now, being compelled to take action, is one of the most difficult things that we face as salespeople. And that's where the analogy came from. Yeah.
No, it's good. And, you know, you talk about different behaviors. You know, we talked a minute ago about confidence. One of the things I've really noticed that between a good to great salesperson are those salespeople that can read a customer, that can make a quick diagnostic, you know, assessment of what they need in that emergency room or whatever, but that they can then come up with a way to talk to that customer, you know, and it, to me, it's quick thinking. You know, some people can think very quickly. Others, you're out in your car or you're off the phone and you're like, you know, I should have said this, or I missed this opportunity. Is that something that can be taught, or how does somebody hone in on really trying to recognize and then quickly, you know, pivoting to what somebody needs?
I got asked this exact question the other day, and yes, I think it can be taught, but I don't think that means everybody's ceiling is equal. Some people just intuitively know how to do that, whether it's they've got amazing listening skills or whether they're just incredibly charming or whatever it is, right? Some people are just really good at it, and other people are lousy at it. Now, you and I could take somebody who's lousy at it and practice and teach and give them all sorts of tips. And we'll take them, you know, from a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10 to maybe a 5 or a 6. We'll probably never get them to a 10 though. I could take somebody who's a 7 or 8 and get them to a 10. And some people are just hovering around 8, 9, or 10 naturally. So this whole like nature nurture argument in terms of, you know, can sales be taught and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it could be taught. We could take anybody who's absolutely terrible at it and turn them into an average, you know, run-of-the-mill salesperson that's much better than when they started. Can I make everybody a superstar? No, I don't believe that I can.
Yep. I agree with you. I've had that same debate. I love that debate, especially when I'm in front of a sales leader that swears to me they can turn a C-level performer into an A. Yeah. And I just haven't seen it. In 30 years, you just don't see it. But I think you're 100% right. You can get the most out of the C-level performer. You can get the most out of a B. And then opposite sometimes, we can have an A performer and they do mediocre work because they're not being properly led and shown what to do. One of the things that I found is when you have that quick creative person, they don't even realize what they're doing sometimes. Yeah. They're just good at it. Who usually trains some of our newer people, right? Who's the mentor? What do we normally do in a sales organization? We hook John up with Mary because Mary's really good. Well, if Mary's good because she's just has that nature to her, John's not going to be the same, right? He's not going to learn from that. I think we really need to spend time with the individual personalities and show them how they can get better.
Yeah. And you've got to match. If you're going to do this like mentor mentee thing, you got to understand your personnel. You know, you can't take somebody who's just like, you know, a child prodigy of sorts and tell them to teach somebody who's just coming into, you know, the field. They don't know how to articulate why they're so good. This is one of the reasons why, you know, the number one salesperson in an org is very rarely the best person to be a sales manager or a sales leader. They don't know how to articulate and simplify the things that they do. But you take somebody who's quite good at sales, maybe not number one, maybe top 10, right? And they're a little bit more patient and they can break down a, you know, more complicated concept and chunk it up into small, you know, kind of sound bites and skill practice and rehearsal. That person becomes the excellent sales leader or the better mentor for these new people coming in. And if you're running the whole organization, man, you got to know your personnel. Like I'm not going to put this like new and impressionable person with this lone wolf that nobody can replicate, who, you know, is kind of a thorn in my side. I'm not matching them up. And that happens way too often. I really don't understand why it happens other than just haste. You know, and so I wish sales leaders and organizations would just pause for a second, really know their people and make the right adjustment.
Yeah, no, that it's critical. And I think not only for leaders, but you, as you mentioned, for a seller as well to be self-aware. Okay. Yeah. So they know if I can go in and I'm one of those quick thinkers, I maybe don't have to be quite as prepared. I don't maybe have to understand as much about the prospect I'm walking in on, because I'm going to be able to do it on the fly. If that's not my skill, boy, I need to do some other things. One of the things I used to teach people that struggled with that was always having two or three go-to questions that they just knew inside and out. And the idea was when they would need to kind of regroup for a second and say, okay, we're going a little bit off track here. I need to steer this back. Have one or two things you would bring up so that you didn't care about the response, but it was giving you a chance to catch up mentally, saying, okay, where do I need to go? As they're telling me about X, where do I go with this? That self-awareness is so critical. You must have seen it. You've worked with a lot of startups. How do you take somebody that doesn't have that self-awareness and you know, get them to understand that?
Time and energy and effort. You've got to be willing to sit down and have conversations with people that don't have anything to do with pipeline, that don't have anything to do with deal flow or objections or, you know, Salesforce data. You got to have conversations.
Salespeople love Salesforce data, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
They love it. Yeah.
Sure they do. You got to take time to get to know somebody. You know, 75% of your job is arguably a therapist as a sales leader, is listening to the problems going on in your sales teams, salespeople's lives, and helping them kind of talk through it and think through it and get their confidence back and problem solve some kind of situation that gets them unstuck, right? And, you know, I've been told by people, colleagues of mine before, like, why do you spend so much time with your people? I don't let my people talk to me about their problems. I'm like, well, maybe that's why your people don't like you very much and don't perform as well. You know, So if I sit and have conversations with you about your strengths and weaknesses, and I get to understand you and your psyche, and I know, you know, you're insecure about this, you've got this going on, you got family stress going on, right? You're dealing with bereavement, trying to make all the, whatever's going on. I can be a little more empathetic to the situation. I can help make you aware of what's going on, and I can help you put yourself in a better position to succeed. And I think sometimes we falsely trust that people know how to put themselves in the right place to succeed. A perfect example is if you're somebody who's hyper competitive, who moves a million miles an hour and needs constant and quick gratification.
Sounds like a good salesperson, but go ahead.
Going to get a sales job in a 18 to 24 month sales cycle is probably not the ideal environment for you. Mm-hmm. If you are a long talker, a relationship builder, a schmoozer, and don't like sort of the intensity of having to throw a deal on the board every single day, putting yourself in a high velocity sales environment is a bad move. And I have seen people do both, and I don't understand that, right? Just because you can sell good in one environment doesn't mean you'll sell good in another environment. And just because somebody was not great in an environment doesn't mean they can't be great in a different one. You see this in sports all the time. How many times have you seen somebody get traded from your team to a different team and all of a sudden they become good? Well, it's a different system, potentially. It's a different philosophy. They're playing a slightly different role. It's suited to their skill set a little better. So just having those conversations with people and helping them become aware of who they are will help them perform better.
Yeah, it goes right back to the beginning of your process, which is that mindset. You know, that to me, sales is one of those things that you always have to be on. You know, when you're getting in all day long, you're talking to prospects, you're talking to clients, you're following up with people, you've got to be on. You've got to know how to check whatever that emotional baggage is that you woke up with. That's got to be checked at the door, because you need to be on. And you're talking about leaders that know how to get with that person and help them move their baggage along so that their mindset is where it needs to be when they go out. And you would think that a highly skilled professional athlete would not need somebody to help them with their mindset, but absolutely, they work different in different organizations and things like that. You remember Chuck Knobloch, right?
Oh, 100%. He got the yips.
Yeah, I mean, there's a perfect example, and you know, there's so many of those. That mindset is so very important. And you know, you were talking. I've worked with a number of people that would sit down as a sales leader and they would work with somebody who needed a particular way. Like, you know how that fast talker, the people that need that quick sale. The company I was with, we hired people from a lot of competing forms of media. So I was in media sales, we were in direct mail, high sense of urgency, came out really quick. We would hire people from billboards. We would hire people from TV or radio or yellow pages back in the day. A lot of people really good in their industry, when they came to our pace and our form of sale, it just didn't work. And you'd sit there and you wonder, well, why is it not working? It just was not the environment for their particular style.
Hey listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Bloomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-9871. Now back to our show.
That's right, because I want to make sure we cover that process for our listeners today. We're building that mindset, knowing their stuff, they've got to stick to a plan, right? Once they're out there and they're selling it, they've got to stick to a plan. If somebody's struggling a little bit, right? And most sellers are. We're just coming into quarter number two here after the 2020 that we've all had. I think a lot of people are just starting to ramp up and get where they want to go. If they're struggling a little bit, how do they stick to the plan that they know makes them successful?
You know, what's interesting about what you just described is how many sellers think that they are sticking to the plan and don't realize that they've deviated from it. Think about how many times you've sat down with one of your salespeople and said, hey, what's going on? What do you think you're, kind of struggling with? Why isn't it happening? And their response is, I don't know, Scott, I'm following the script like perfectly. I'm hitting all my numbers. Like, I don't know what's going on. And then I'm like, well, let's look at that. and I look at the numbers and they're like, 60% of what the activity should be. And then we listen to the calls and we're like, oh, you just completely skipped over finding the pain and just started pitching our solution, like you're a blabbermouth. And they're like, oh, wow, I didn't even know I was doing that. It happens all the time. So the first thing I do to get somebody to, stay with the plan is basically hold a mirror up in front of their face and say, have you actually been sticking with the plan so far? And more often than not, they haven't been. So we've got to go all the way back to the beginning, start with the basics all over again, get them kind of locked in on the right process and the right plan. And then some results start showing up. And then we're like, okay, see, it's coming. Now we got to stay right here in this pocket. We got to stay right here. This will deliver the results, right? So that's what I have found more to be true. More than me just saying, hey, you just got to stick with it. You got to stick with it. It's like, well, let's pause for a second because I bet you haven't been sticking with it as much as possible. And almost all the time, that proves to be accurate.
Yep. No, 100%. And I think that's one of the reasons that so many companies struggle with any type of training that they do. Because you can give somebody a great book to read. You can have a phenomenal training conference for 2-3 days. But then they go out in the field and they start trying to implement. And they're just off by a little bit, right? I think you talk in the book, that swing, the swing isn't just perfectly aligned. And all of a sudden, like, well, that was... Why did they have Tom come out and Scott teach me this? It doesn't work. I knew it wasn't going to work, but they trained me on it, so I tried it. And the swing is just off a little bit, right? You've got to have follow-up with anything you're doing to look at, hold that mirror up. So let's say a seller's out there right now and their company's not giving it to them. Because I think we're both in agreement as we're talking today. So many leaders are not helping their people the way they need to. So many organizations are not doing it. A seller's listening saying, you know what? Yeah, maybe my process is off a little bit. How can they do this on their own? Because I think they can. What are the steps? What are a couple things that you would say, hey, if your leader's not any good, your company's not helping you, we're going to get you there. Do these couple things.
I'd actually reframe your statement a little bit. In the sense that they don't have to do it on their own. It has never been easier to get help from a massive sales community in the history of time. There was no such thing as podcasts when you and I were selling. There was no such thing as audiobooks or ebooks. There was no such thing as LinkedIn. There was not the access. Look, I got through college, and I bet you did too, without the internet. I didn't even have an email address when I got through college, right? Mm-hmm. So the access to information and the access to people has never been greater. So if you're in a sales org and you're not getting the help that you need and you're doing nothing about it, shame on you. Because the amount of resources out there are staggering. There are sales communities everywhere, From my Thursday night sales community to my Patreon community. There's a company I'm an advisor to called Rev Genius. There's Revenue Collective. There's Modern Sales Pros. And you go on and on and on and on. And just building a network of people who are, in the same role as you or are in or have been in roles that you want to get to one day, part of your job is to surround yourself with people who can help guide you along the way, people that you can learn from. And it's really not that hard. It takes just a little bit of effort. You know, I'm maxed out at 30,000 connections on LinkedIn, and I have like 63,000 followers, something like that. I reply to every message that I get. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, sure. But I've got tremendous value out of it. You know, you never know who you might be able to help. And in turn, you never know who might be able to help you along the way. So just putting forth a thoughtful kind of ask and engaging with people and trying to build a relationship through these different networks that are out there, it is the simplest, easiest thing that you can do. And, you know, do something on your own. There's a million and one sales podcasts with super smart people, you know, whether it's your show, Tom, my show, or countless others out there. You could be consuming this content all day, every day, if you wanted to, and not doing anything about it. You know, that really falls flat with me, and I'm gonna shut the excuse factory door on you. You should be doing something about it.
Now, I like the way you said it. It's one of the things I try to tell people all the time. You know, stop the excuses. Don't tell me you don't have this, you don't have that. You know, it's up to you. If you want to be successful, you got to manage yourself to that, and it can be done. And you brought up several good ways they can do it. Social media, I'm convinced that if social media was here the way it is now when I was back on the street selling, I would have never gone into leadership, because I would have made far more money with the sales opportunities that are there for people now to take advantage. You know, if I wanted to learn about a prospect, I had to go knock on the door. You know, I had to go in, I had to go visit them when the owner wasn't there and ask questions and learn. You know, the internet has really changed things, as social media has. I know we got to run here. We really appreciate all your time, but you have done so well with social selling, with what you do in it. One quick tip to people that would help them with social selling.
Yeah, I mean, just don't pitch. It works the opposite of how you might think it works. Don't pitch people. I never pitch people in social. You know, I just share information, share experiences, give things away all the time, try to help as many people out as humanly possible, grow my network to be as big as I can, and good things, you know, come of it. You know, I had this conversation a couple of days ago with a friend of mine named Morgan Ingram, who you might know. And we were talking about how, you know, you should strive for impact rather than income. And if your mindset is to make an impact rather than make a big income, the result is that the degree of impact you make becomes the degree of your income. So that's the biggest tip that I can give people. You know, don't look at it as a vehicle to pitch. Look at it as a vehicle to serve and provide and network and engage and build relationships, and good things come.
Fantastic. And it's a great way for us to wrap up. You know, anybody who's doing anything in sales, you got to look at things long term, right? Build it, do what you need to do, and things will work out. You can't look at it the short-sighted way. Scott, I saved the final 40 minutes of the podcast because it's going to probably take you that long to tell everybody all the places they can find you. How do they listen to your show? I want to find out how I go to Costa Rica next winter. So share with our audience how they follow up if they want to hear more from you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you can find me on LinkedIn. Like I said, I reply to everybody. I have no connection, you know, connections left, so you'll have to send me a direct message.
I can sell them one if they need one, you know, just for, you
yeah,
know.
I'll delete yours and make room for somebody
it's
else.
It's my new side hustle, so I'll yeah. hook them up. I just reach there you out. Go.
Every Thursday night, you know, I host a virtual happy hour for a couple hours with my co-host, Amy Volos. This is a funny little picture of us right here. If anybody is watching the video, mm-hmm. That's ThursdayNightSales.com if you want to register.
You know, Amy does carry you through that. I just want our listeners to know. I mean, you're good, but Amy pretty much carries that show.
Listen, I know how to surround myself with talent. So I'm just a little, you know, passenger, right? And I just get the crumbs.
It's like Jim Kelly. He had Thurman Thomas. He had Andre Reed. He had Bruce Smith. So,
yeah. Hey, I'm just here to ride everybody else's coattails a little bit. And surfinsales.com, you should check out. You know, obviously we can't hold events right now, but we'll probably come out with a bang. We'll probably try to hold 3 or 4 the moment we're able to. So if you want to, you know, get a different take on a sales conference and get out of the country and learn how to surf and hang out with like-minded people for a week, check it out. And Surf and Sales Podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify and every other, you know, podcast place out there. So those are the best bets to check me out. And if you're a company who's, you know, trying to figure out how to scale your sales organization, that's what I do in my day job, my main job. I'm a strategic advisor to startups all around the world, and you can see a little bit about my work there at scottleesconsulting.com.
Fantastic. Can you do me a favor and just sit up straight for just a second, a little bit higher, a little higher? Okay, I just want to be able to invoice Sales Loft. I'm working on sponsors, so
pre-advertising.
They will be a great sponsor. So tell them they were on the show. I'll send the invoice, and this will be great. Scott, this has been a blast. I got to tell you real quick, I am looking forward, and this could be the boomer in me that's coming out. I love Thursday Night Sales, but I am looking forward to when you expand to an East Coast version. So it's my happy hour, because 8, 9 at night, I'm getting a little tired. I got to tell you. So, but when you do the, when you, because it's going to happen, right? You're going to have an East Coast happy hour time. So you got to let me know. I'm really excited.
We're being pushed hard to establish a European friendly version. So that'll be about, you know, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's about your nap time.
Yeah, that's right before my happy hour dinner. That's perfect. I'm good. My early birds. Scott, it's been a pleasure. Have a great time, and we really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week, and don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure, the website, okboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn @Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.